Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernon. I created the space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Enjoy. Hello there. This cold sounds way worse than it is. I'm actually fine, but I sound horrendous. This week I'm sharing a really nice episode. I spoke with Jennifer, who talks me through her two pregnancies. She gave birth to her little girl first, and then she went on to give birth to twin boys. Her experiences they were so different. When she was giving birth to her little girl, she was full of fear. She talks about shedding a tear when she was in the chapel, how much pain she was in, how she couldn't believe the world was still turning, and she was in so much pain because it was so huge to her that it wasn't a nice feeling. She felt completely out of control and it wasn't where she wanted to be. Second time round, completely different. She put her heart and soul into preparing for the birth of her boys and it was such a gorgeous experience. She gave birth to them vaginally and completely unmedicated. Not necessarily what she was planning. She was open to an epidural, but the boys were coming so quick that there wasn't any time, which she is glad of because she was up and about then fairly quickly afterwards, having a shower and just doing all those little bits and pieces we do after we give birth. Really gorgeous story. You'll hear throughout the middle of the story, Jennifer shares that her little girl was diagnosed with verbal dyspraxia. It takes me a moment because my son was also diagnosed with verbal dyspraxia and it's quite rare. So to meet someone else who has a child who suffers, who got the same diagnosis, I haven't yet. So I just want to highlight a charity that has really helped both Jennifer and I, and it's Finding Charlie's Voice. And they created amazing communication boards, which I use, I've put it in my relative's house, I've put it in his play school just to help him because these kids find it so hard to communicate on a daily basis and the work that Evelyn and everyone around her is doing with this charity is really going a long way and I want to show her as much support as I can. So thank you, Evelyn. Thank you, Jennifer, for sharing this amazing story and I'm so glad I met you. Enjoy this episode and I'll chat to you all soon. Okay, let's get stuck in. Thank you for coming on to the podcast. I'm really looking forward to having a chat and thank you for your patience last night. This cold got the better of me. So let's chat about a little bit about you and then we'll talk about your births.
Sure. My name is Jennifer. I live in Dublin. My husband is Owen and we have three kids. They're Evelyn, who's 3.5, and Derek and Patrick are twins and they are almost 4 months old.
Cool. Yeah, so very busy household.
Yes, extremely busy and noisy.
And does it exist for you, the 4 month sleep progression?
No, day one, or even before the sleep, like for the end of a twin pregnancy, the physicality of getting into bed, then when you're in bed, like I'd say I haven't slept probably in the last, say, 6 or 7 months. We'll pile it on, yeah. But very happy, you know yourself, like besotted with the twins and with Evelyn as well. We're just so lucky.
So let's talk about your first pregnancy.
Sure. So we were together donkey's years. We're married a year. We had a COVID wedding with 6 guests. We had a big blowout, stunning wedding, only 6 guests. My poor family literally told half my family they couldn't attend. But way back in 2017, my mom unexpectedly took a stroke. She made a full recovery, but that was the kind of first time we were like, oh my God, what if my mom doesn't meet my kids? So we're kind of like, okay, I think we need to jumpstart. So very, very thankfully, the following month we had conceived who was then to be Evelyn. I had a very healthy pregnancy. I was walking to and from the office. I felt relatively fit. No real complications towards the end. I went semi-private in Holles Street. Loved my consultant. She was absolutely brilliant. But like that, very low risk. I would say my preparation for the first birth was akin to my preparation for my Irish oral exam, where I walked out. That was all about dolphins, and they were like, it was robots. It was like, so because the thing is with my sisters, my mom, my sister-in-law, one of my sister-in-law, they had spontaneous vaginal deliveries, no time for pain relief. So I was like, this is going to be me. My consultant was like, that head is right down. And so I just assumed that it would be the same. Even the antenatal prep course, I felt, looking back, which hindsight is 2020, looking back on it now, it was so focused on pain relief. I was just like, God, there's loads of options. Do you know when you look back, you cringe. And even looking at the notes about how many nappies to use and wet wipes, you're like, what about the day after? Do you know what I mean? It just stops. So funny.
So tell me how you felt.
The pregnancy was all very straightforward. And then towards the end, I think I got up to about 41 and 5 days. So I was well over, and I was offered a sweep. And at that time, I was kind of desperate to go into labor. So I took that no problem. And that night, then I began to feel contractions. I was like, this is very exciting. I did diligently put on the wash and did a bit of hoovering, and the contractions were very strong and regular. And I was like, this is brilliant. Now I'm just going to go into the hospital. So we rang and they said, well, if they're within 4 minutes, come in. And I was examined when I went in. They said, well, you're not really in established labor, but you're borderline. Do you want to stay? And I was like, yeah, sure. You know, I've nothing else to do. Worst decision ever. As soon as I got there, I mean, the contractions completely came to a halt. And then when they did come back, it was kind of 24 hours of contracting with no progression, you know, and even the conversation was not progressing, not dilating, cervix unfavorable, you know, this kind of language that you've never heard before in your life. And it was just a slippery slope then. And I think within 10 or 12 hours of these, what were excruciating to me, and nothing happening, do you know what I mean? Like, so frustrating. I had literally no idea. Like I said, the preparation I thought I had done, you know, tick box, antenatal education done, listened to all of my friends' birth stories, etc. I just wasn't prepared, and I was completely taken aback by the pain, didn't know how to control it or anything like that. Even I sent, he was my partner then, but my husband now, we sent him home for 2 hours because there was just nothing happening. And my mom came in and my sisters came in. I was just walking the halls. I ended up in the chapel. I was weeping in the chapel, you know, like I was looking at the window and I was like, could I go home? I was like, I don't like this pain at all. And you know, when they, which the medical language, obviously it's for a reason, but it was just that kind of language, like not progressive. I was like, well, what am I supposed to do? Just sitting there in pain with nothing happening, you know?
And so when you say you were weeping, was it fear or was it like the reality of, yeah, what was about to happen, or the, I suppose, the unknown as well?
It was complete fear, Cora. I had literally shut off. Like, originally when I came in and they were like, yeah, you're contracting away, that's good. I told you it completely slowed down, picked right back up, but there was still no, like, I expected 2 centimeters, 3 centimeters. No, that just wasn't happening. It was barely one after 24 hours. And that night, when my family came in, I was just bawling, crying. I was like, this can't be labor. This, I have to be soon delivery. It was just fear. And once fear enters, there's very little you can do to claw it back. So I had literally gone straight onto the, like, to request for pain relief. So I think I had two shots of pethidine, which didn't make me sick, but didn't really give me much relief either. And then eventually I had, the midwife was able to break my fore and then my hind waters. But I found that very painful. Even the vaginal exams, I found them really painful as well. Again, it was just kind of piling on top. But eventually when the waters were broken, I was in, I think I was 4 centimeters then and brought down to delivery. So I was straight away, need an epidural. I need the pain relief. And that was fine. That worked a treat. But it was like I was pumping so much that, you know, I got to sleep. Now, my husband said I didn't sleep, but I'm sure I got at least an hour asleep in active labor. Bonkers. But I needed it. I was 24 hours fighting that pain. But like I said, I had envisaged that as my sisters, my mom, everyone who went before me, I thought I would walk in a few hours and walk back out with the baby in tow. That didn't happen. So yeah, like I said, I just went straight for the epidural and that was absolutely fine. But once I'd had that, I completely relaxed. And then I could just let it happen after a little bit of a snooze. You know yourself, I couldn't really eat. So my energy levels were low. But apart from that, then it was within, I'd say about 6 hours. I needed the Pitocin drip as well because that had slowed my contractions having the epidural. And then about an hour's pushing. And then they said, I think we need to have some assistance. So they got the doctor in who did a Ventouse delivery and an episiotomy. And again, like, I just wasn't prepared. Not that there'd be extra people in the room or anything, but just how the mood, how the atmosphere can shift, because my midwife was brilliant, like so encouraging. And the consultant who delivered Evelyn was absolutely brilliant as well. But I just wasn't prepared. And I, like, after listening to the hours of the women who generously shared their story, and then outside, I just felt like I hadn't been present at the birth of my daughter. Like, I was there, I was pushing, but, you know, the midwife was holding my stomach, telling me that I was having a contraction because my epidural was strong enough that I couldn't feel it. And then the consultant was pulling on the Ventouse, and it took a long time for me to kind of realize that I had trauma associated with that. Even though I had a live birth, you know, like, there's no complaints. I received excellent care, but I just didn't realize. I didn't realize that when I went home and the months after, years after, even until I had my second and third birth, it was still a trauma that I carried. You know, I would have told anyone on the street that I was upset by that delivery, like that I felt like I hadn't delivered her because I needed that assistance. If you know what I mean. I know that sounds really silly, but I couldn't, until I heard someone else say it on a podcast. I was like, oh, I felt that too. I didn't have the vocabulary around it, like, because I told you my preparation wasn't great.
And did you feel, I suppose, in the way people say, oh, well, you know, you're okay and the baby's okay. Did you feel like you couldn't be open about how you felt for I suppose that's just one reason?
Oh, no, definitely. Because apart from that, I had kept a very open mind. I hadn't written a birth plan, but I had also been very open minded about how I would feed Evelyn. I was desperate to try breastfeeding. Even towards the end of my pregnancy, I began to soak through my pajamas because I had overspike that I didn't know about. Okay. But again, my consultant, like, the care I received before, during and after was huge encouragement. You're great. Which was brilliant. And even, you know, the ads for Aptamil where they have to show that breastfeeding is important. I actually still find that kind of triggering because the baby that's in the ad is 9 months old. It's not a 1 week old that can't latch, that's struggling at the breast. So when I,
good point. Yeah.
After a traumatic delivery for me, I then wanted to try breastfeeding, which was just, it was such a battle. I'd say for the first 3 months, it was an uphill battle. I mean, I have absolutely no regrets. I fed her up until she was 2 years, but honestly, it was like, it was akin to learning to drive at a very minimum for me, because Evelyn had huge difficulties latching and I had massive oversupply. So I was attending the breastfeeding support group in Hollis Street, and our district nurse in the primary care centre was brilliant, but I was for 3 months straight feeding Evelyn only with nipple shields. Like, I could put them on when I was fully asleep, but I couldn't go anywhere without it. Like, it was, then I was like, God, I wonder would she have nipple confusion if I gave her a bottle. But I was feeding her through a silicone nipple shield. You know, the things that you think back and you're like, what was I worried about? But those shields were the only way I could feed her. But because it was through the shield and an oversupply, Evelyn was vomiting after every feed. Not, it wasn't to the stage projectile, because I've obviously rang the ward. They said, if it doesn't hit the opposite wall, not to worry about it. And she gained weight so slowly. It was like borderline request to top up. If, and again, everybody I went to see, you're brilliant. Well, look at you, your first baby, you're breastfeeding. So I was like, all right, yeah, that's fine. And when they say that the vomiting, that's, and it's kind of mimics reflux, colics, and all of the symptoms of oversupply. But when they say it's only a laundry problem, I mean, like, car seat wrecked every day, the bed wrecked, me wrecked, mattress wrecked. Like, it was bonkers when I think back. But I was also using the Hakka pump to catch breast milk on the other side. But that was also stimulating my milk.
Yeah,
so
of course,
I was not only feeding Evelyn, but I was stimulating. I could have fed triplets. So if I, again, if I look back, if I'd have given her a top-up, that would have reduced my supply. That would have been brilliant. But I think a lot of people respect your decision to breastfeed, and not a lot of people would say, I'll just give her a top-up, because obviously if you want to breastfeed, that's fine. But I definitely struggled with even to get her off the nipple shields then, because she was so used to it. The only way I managed to do it was eventually 3 months down the line, when she was halfway through a feed, I would take it off to kind of try and get her used to it. And I did get it off. And then from there on in, I was like the woman in the ad. It was the 3 months before that I was not.
That's tough going, Jennifer.
Yeah. I know. And like hindsight, you know, I could have just given her a top up, and I didn't feel particularly strong about it. But when you're looking down and you see milk pouring, you're like, why would I? What a waste. You know, wonderful.
But also, like, you don't want to feel, because I had a similar feeling, but mine was under supply.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to feel like, I'll be honest, I did not want to feel defeated.
Yeah,
it's like, I can do this. And then I remember, I think I said it in my episode, I can't remember, but crying all the way to Tesco because the freezer was dry. I was dry. He was hungry. And I was like, I actually have no choice. And I can't remember what age he was, maybe 4 or 5 months, bawling all the way to Tesco. But it was just, you just feel so defeated, and you just, why can't it work? And you push your way probably into a place that maybe you could, a dark place maybe sometimes as well.
I was defeated by her birth, you see, because I now understand that I realized that I, which is ridiculous because I did push her out with help, but I felt like I had not been present. So me overwork, and I read books and books because I did very little prep beforehand, but I consumed every book, even the Bibles of breastfeeding that say, if you have an epidural, it's less likely that you'll bond with your baby, like books that kind of have way too much information. But in fairness to the books, those were the ones that said surround yourself by people who are breastfeeding. So I sought out anyone who had breastfed before. Like I said, I attended clinics and support. So I did, I got over that 3 months, but literally 3 months of not knowing if week on she would have gained weight. And you know yourself, you can only measure by output nappies and weights, and it does. I was like a mathematician by the end.
Yeah,
I was
90
grams, 105 grams, like madness.
And how did you feel then from, a mental point of view then? Do you feel like you suffered from postnatal anxiety or anything like that?
I would definitely say I had trauma related to Evelyn's birth. I had a huge support system around me. And like, once I'd hit that 3 month mark, myself and herself would just Zoom off, we go to the cinema, I could feed her. It was brilliant. You know, even before you're weaning, you literally just need yourself, baby, and nappy, which is great. But it's only now that I realize that trauma from her birth, like, that I still carry. It was just something I had complete, like, even the physicality of recovering from an episiotomy, from the Vontus. We brought her to an osteopath. Like, we took a really holistic approach, whereas I wish I had probably just gone and had a check-in for myself rather than brutally breastfeeding and I had gallons of milk in the freezer and everything, but I was still struggling to feed her. And it was only then later, so it's skipping a little bit ahead, but Evelyn at 2.5 was diagnosed with verbal dyspraxia, and that's motor planning speech disorder.
Oliver has it as well.
No way. Verbal dyspraxia.
I feel like crying. I know.
Warriors, verbal dyspraxia awareness.
That is mental. I've never spoken to anybody and it's so rare.
So rare.
Honestly, two and a half. Oliver was diagnosed as well.
2.5. So it actually, there are studies that link birth similar to von Tussack. Now, it's more likely idiopathic, that there's no known reason for the cause. But again, looking back on it, her struggles to latch. Is it because her jaw, all of the muscles that we take for granted for speech, that have to coordinate to make any sounds like mommy, even say your own name? I'm wondering, you know, it's so easy to blame yourself for anything, but honestly, the struggles that your child has, my child has, you know, communication is a basic need. But that was one of the things I was like, oh, maybe. And that was actually kind of healing. I know that sounds ridiculous, but that potential that she had difficulty from birth, because the disorder is from birth, that probably makes more sense than, oh my God, I was just really rubbish at it. If you know what I mean? That's mad. That's mad.
It is. Okay, let's chat about your next pregnancy.
Sure. So I had a little spoiler earlier in our chat there that I'd gone to the GP when I was around 10 weeks, found out on my own. My husband was literally in prison working away and I couldn't tell him. So my sister lives nearby, so I just walked around her house and I was like, oh my God, it's twins. And it was the strangest sensation that I couldn't tell my husband. Very funny. He, in fairness, he had a lunch break, so about 2 hours, but by then I think I told the newspapers. Like, it was such a shock, and it was, in fairness, it was the lowest risk. So they were dichorionic, diamniotic, so they had their own placenta, their own sac, lowest of a high risk pregnancy. And my GP was like, you need to tell the hospital now. He was like, have you booked in? I was like, no. I was COVID, you know, I didn't want to bother anyone. And he was like, ring them now, because they have to verify that there is a membrane, and the bigger you get, the more difficult it is to see the membrane. So because that determines how many scans you have, you know, like crucial information. So like that, it was just that there seemed to be a backlog for the 12-week scans. We really loved our consultant with Evelyn, but we felt like the public system was absolutely fine by us to go with the twins. I had heard kind of anecdotally that the public system was very good for twins anyways, because you're treated very well. And again, we received excellent care. So we went through the public system there. Like, honestly, I knew, but I didn't know. Around the time I took the pregnancy test, I thought I was shown anyways, I felt violently ill and I actually fainted. I was ironing one of the days before I found out. I just, you know, the hormone shifts, but yeah. that kind of sickness, I was sick all day. That sickness kind of carried through up until about 22 weeks. And actually I had, I wasn't deficient in iron, but my iron levels were low. And that was, again, that was something that they took extremely seriously with twins, because low iron, again, you're birthing two babies, so they monitored that very, very closely. I think I was tested for gestational diabetes as well, and then towards the end of the pregnancy I had a really bad pelvic girdle pain. I told you when we were chatting away at the beginning that I had great difficulty getting into bed and getting out of bed, and just even going to the loo was excruciating. But typical things, like, but outside that, you know, the babies were grown well. Like, I kind of touched on being very open-minded with Evelyn's birth, but like that, it was my mission to be better prepared. I mean, I couldn't have had a more different situation with a twin pregnancy. That's kind of why I went outside the podcast realms way out to New Zealand, because there's a huge amount of birth stories, again, that were twins. I looked into breech. I was an over-reader, researcher. I was looking at, how would you deliver breech twins? Because I tried to think of the language, but I wanted a vag- vaginal birth after my vaginal birth. It's not a VBAC, but I wanted a VBAC that I was present to. So I was open to a cesarean if it was necessary, but I was really hoping to have a vaginal birth, and I knew that was all determined by the position of twin one, which twin one at the time, he's now Derek, but twin one was head down for most of my pregnancy. But during that time, my husband got COVID and I was 8 months pregnant, and it was around the time that we had to isolate, and my daughter Evelyn had to be off school for 17 days. So during that time when I was minding her, I couldn't sit on the floor with her. I couldn't do anything. I was literally in bits, but I had to be signed off for those 2 weeks while Owen was isolating. But twin one turned breech as well, and I was like, no, he's been head down the whole time. So like in the public system, you see a different person at every scan. So kind of towards the 8-9 month mark, that's when they kind of said, look, have you any thoughts? And I just said, I'm really open, hoping for a vaginal delivery. But they were like, well, twin one is breech, so you have to be prepared. And I was like, that's fine, no problem.
I just want to take a moment to introduce you to our new podcast sponsors, KiwiCo. So especially with Oliver, I found play actually quite challenging. I wasn't sure if the play that I was doing with him was developmentally what he needed. I was actually quite anxious about it, and I really needed someone to give me guidance and make me move away from researching things, to kind of take that aspect out of it and create something for me to sit down and enjoy with him. So this is pretty much what KiwiCo do, and they have created the Panda Crate. So the Panda Crate is basically a subscription service for play essentials designed just for babies and toddlers aged between 0 to 24 months. So it's created by play experts at KiwiCo in partnership with Seattle Children's Hospital. Panda Crate is thoughtfully designed with care to stimulate your baby's brain development through play. Panda Crate is a science-backed, research-based approach to play and recognises that there's more to babyhood than just the milestones. Panda Crate is designed to support child-led play and open-ended exploration, because every child is different, every path is unique, and each twist and turn and bump in this journey is an opportunity for connection, discovery and learning. Something that I loved about the Panda Crate was the gorgeous wooden toys, and it was really well explained as well. So one of the crates that we got had loads of animals in it, which was really nice because Eva in particular is crazy about animals, so I found that she really connected and interacted with the crate itself. So it was brilliant. How it works. So Panda Crate is a subscription service timed to your child's particular age and stage, with shipments every other month. Each crate includes 2 months worth of play products and activities, along with helpful resources and play inspiration for parents too, which in all honesty is what I have always needed and still do need to this day. Whether you are a first-time parent or not, Panda Crate provides a way to simplify the early years with just right products to support your baby's rapid development in the first 2 years of life. So something that definitely kind of takes the stress and anxiety out of thinking, am I creating the right play environment?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
For my child, especially during those 2 years of lots of sleepless nights, get 30% off your first month plus free shipping with code IREBIRTH at kiwico.com. That's 30% off your first month at kiwico.com with promo code IREBIRTH. Now, back to this week's episode.
Did you feel him turn? Did you feel any move? You did. Oh, cool. Okay. Well, sorry, not cool, but you know what I mean.
I know. It was so weird. It was like, I thought, you know, again, holistic. I was like, oh, I must have slipped a disc. Like, I was pregnant with twins, carrying a 3-year-old around. Like, of course, something would happen. But yeah, I was trying to pick her up when she was upset. But I went for the day Owen came out of isolation. I was like, I'm going for a massage. My back is broke. But the girl I met, again, another kindred spirit, she had said, oh, how was your first pregnancy? I told her all about the birth. And she was like, I think you can use, I think it's moxibustion or something that you burn at your toe. But you know, when someone just sympathizes with you, that can be enough. Literally, I rate that chat that I had with her, the reason that twin one eventually turned back head down. And she had said, you know, like, what prep are you doing? So at that point, I was telling her, I'm listening to every podcast, I've saved podcasts, any vaginal twin delivery, I've listened to 10 times. And she was like, have you considered hypnobirthing? I was like, no, not into hypnobirthing, never heard of it. I have enough on my plate. She was like, just listen to one track. So there was a specific track that was to do, I don't know, it was a Von Toost delivery track, and it's a meditation by the script. And I was hooked straight after that. I was signed up to everything. But then, to be honest, over COVID, I was working, and I was working remotely. So that was the only saving grace, that I was out of the office. So I was at home for my entire pregnancy. Because not only like you're fighting the low iron, but the tiredness, like I'd have to nap on my lunch, I'd have to nap in the evening. I was wrecked. But I wouldn't have been able to attend like an all day hypnobirthing course. So one of the positives of having a pregnancy in COVID was that courses were basically online. Everything was online. You watched them on your own terms. And it kind of democratized that education part as well, because the prices, like some of the prices of those courses, although I absolutely rate them, I'd be an evangelist of hypnobirthing myself. I'm considering training in it myself. That's how much I believe in it. But they are so expensive, especially when you're going from a family of 3 to 5. You're like, whoops. But so I did the Positive Birth Company. It's a digital pack. You watch it on your own time now. I wouldn't have said that I'd be mad into the guided meditation. My brain doesn't really switch off. I told you, I read books and books, and that's how I learn. But I really liked the affirmations, those things that the stickers you put around that say, my body has made the baby and I can birth the baby. And it was all brilliant. But the science behind breathing and the breathing technique, like, honestly, it completely changed my approach, because I was literally in fear. Again, my husband was over the moon. He was like, twins, we're so lucky. But I was the one who was like, oh my gosh, I have to birth these twins. Like, what's
responsible?
Totally. And I feel so guilty saying it, but I had huge pockets of joy throughout the pregnancy, and I was generally well, apart from the pain that I would have associated with a twin pregnancy. But I was so in fear of the birth I was like, this can't, I have to be able to do this. I have to. And that's how the hypnobirthing with the breathing, when I had understood that muscles starved of oxygen are painful. And it was like a light bulb. Mm. It's like, this is amazing. So I had practiced that a good bit, but I didn't get too much from the guided meditations, but more so just the realization that there is a science behind hypnobirthing, not that it's like a form of hypnosis or magic, etc. It is magic, really, but there is a science behind it. So I was completely hooked from there on in. And I know some of the women on your podcast would have said the exact same. It's kind of the best kept secret, but I know that there's a lot of spokespersons now that are saying that this is amazing. And I actually even took another one. I tell a lie. The Holland Street had a hypnobirthing course. Again, it was free and I could attend remotely. I told you, even if I had a free 1 week course to go to the States to do it, I couldn't have done it in my state. I could barely walk. So it was brilliant. The one from Hall Street, and then the digital pack that you could just watch the videos. They were short videos that you just watch at your own pace. So that was brilliant. So my prep, I'd say I probably listened to about 300 hours of podcasts and the Positive Birth Company videos. And it was amazing. It was amazing because I felt like I knew that when I felt those pains, that every pain meant something. I just hadn't understood that before. Beforehand, I was like, God, there's loads of pain relief options. That's brilliant. Whereas this time I understood that the contractions were for a reason and not to be feared.
And did you feel like you were being kind to yourself by preparing as much as you did?
Yeah, I did. I had the house smelling like mass because I did. I love aromatherapies. I think I actually wrote myself a prescription at the end. I was like some mad scientist. I was burning frankincense, which they use for funerals or whatever, and only swap has be like, what's going on? But different scents then I would associate with different things, you know, like if I had a busy day or burn different oils. But yeah, like I was just it was a total form of self-care. Yeah. And like that, somebody on the in the hypnobirthing course said that vaginal exams were optional. I didn't know you could say no. I didn't know that there was a whole thing. Again, I'm not saying it from a care perspective. I received great care, but I said before that I found them extremely painful. I found sweeps painful. Anything that was going in the wrong direction, I felt extremely painful. So then I knew, like, by the end of the amount of podcasts I listened to, I was so confident in my birth preferences that I wrote them and I left them at home. I didn't even need to bring in a sheet. I was so confident. So with a twin pregnancy, they don't allow you to go over 38 weeks if they both have their own placenta that blow both sacks. So they had said that more than likely I'd be booked in for an induction. Now, and there's a whole thing about, and again, a lot of people would have had really negative experiences with induction. With Evelyn, I had gone into labor spontaneously, but by then I was in so much pain I couldn't wait. So I was like absolutely fine. I had really hoped that I could just have my waters broken or that they would go themselves, and it was around Christmas time as well, so I was like, I'll have my Christmas dinner, babies will be here, but nothing happened. So I got right up to 37 weeks and 6 days. So even the difference of, like, the day with Evan that I spent with contractions, not eating, not progressing. This time I slept 6 hours before I was going in. My mother-in-law collected Evelyn, was really sad. She scooted off and she didn't look back. I was like, oh, your world is about to change. But I slept the night before. We ate. I had lunch. Like, in the morning, the consultant was doing the rounds. So I went straight to the unit 3 in Holland Street. Consultant came around. Literally out of nowhere, she came in and she was like, how are you? How are you feeling? Oh, twins, very exciting. And out of nowhere, I stood up from the bed. I said, I didn't cope very well with my last pregnancy and delivery. And she was like, oh, are you okay? And my husband's face, oh my God, he went puce red. He couldn't stop laughing. Then, so she had a look, and a couple of days before they had tried to do a sweep, but they'd said that my cervix was unfavorable again. I was like, no. But she was a Wonder Woman. She was able to break my waters, which was brilliant. So that was fine. But then when they left, my husband was like, what were you on about? What did you say? It was an involuntary reflex that I just wanted to put it out there that I didn't cope. And in fairness, she came back and she was like, don't worry, there's lots of pain relief. Like, if you're going for a vaginal birth with twins, they recommend you have an epidural. And that was fine. But on my history, the epidural had slowed my contractions. Yeah. And not that I didn't want it, because I needed it for Evelyn, and it's extremely effective. But she came back to reassure me. She was like, don't worry, we'll see how we go. So this was, she broke my waters around 9:30. She was like, if by lunchtime nothing's happened, we'll put on the Pitocin drip and we'll get you set up with some pain relief. So I can't explain why I had that outburst, because we were chatting and giggling beforehand. But just as soon as I saw this, and I knew I was going to have A, an exam, and B, potential, all the pain of the waters being broken, don't deal very well. But like that, it was quiet in unit three. Waters had broken and nothing was happening. So we were just chatting away like that. I had saved a couple of episodes from you that I hadn't listened to. So I listened to that. Didn't really want to go in the guided meditation. So I just love the podcast. Anyone who's willing to share their birth stories is a hero. So I listened to a couple of podcasts during that time. Started to feel a couple of contractions and I was doing my up breathing. Lunchtime comes around. I actually ate. I had a sandwich. And then I was like, oh, this is picking up. And I kept going in and out to the loo. And what was happening was I was having really, really strong contractions. And you know the force everyone says to sit on the loo. But that was my labor progressing very well. But I was in such a trance. Like, my husband was chatting away to me and I was listening to your podcast. I had a couple of comedy stuff. I was listening to all sorts, like, but I wasn't answering them. I was doing up breathing. I said, God, this is okay. And I started my, one of the midwives came around. She was like, oh, how are you feeling? And I was like, oh, I think I'm having contractions. And she was like, have you been timing them? Now, like I said, I was so invested. I had every app, never tried them. Didn't know how to do them. Like, and when your contractions are irregular, it comes up 25 minutes apart. You know, when you're not timing them properly. Yeah. So I was like, whoops. So I started doing that. And I was like, God, these are fairly regular anyway. So it gets to about 5 o'clock and the midwife comes in and she's like, how are you feeling? Because I wasn't making any noises. I was completely silent, listening to podcasts, doing my upbreathing. When she got close to me, I grabbed her hand and I was like, you need to check me now. Again, totally out of the blue. I think that was the first time I'd spoken probably in about 3 hours because I was so focused. And she was like, oh, you're about three centimeters. But I'm going to bring you straight down to delivery. And she ran and got a wheelchair. I was completely oblivious. I was like, all right, great. It's brilliant. Again, 5 o'clock. I was like, this is fantastic. Like, it's night and day compared to Evelyn. She ran me down that corridor down into delivery. And we had been warned that there would be a lot of staff in the room. Yeah. That didn't bother me. I was like, oh, brilliant. And had two midwives. They were like, oh, look, sure, you're probably in for the long haul, but let's see, can we get you more comfortable? Because I was then beginning to make more noise now that I understood that, you know, this was like active labor. And they're like, we're just going to set up. They started to unpack all their equipment and stuff. And that transition that I felt with the midwife in unit three, my noises started to change. And one of them looked at the other and they were like, what's going on? And they were like, have you thought about the epidural? Now I'm still wearing the mask and I was wearing like really heavy, like fluffy socks, and they were like, you're boiling, you look like you're about to collapse. And I had been given the gas and air, but I didn't like the taste, so I was kind of messing around. They were like, take off the mask, take off your socks, what are you doing? So I was like, yeah, I'll get an epidural, that's fine. And by the time the anaesthetist had come down, they were like, are you pushing? I was like, no, because I wanted the epidural. I was there. So after going through all that time, I was like, actually, no, I would love all of the pain relief, please. So I was trying to hide that I was pushing. And he was like, are you pushing? Everybody was in full knowledge. But so basically the best thing that could have happened was I ran out of time. I was pushing at that stage. So I think from the records, the active labor onset was 5:30. And I had delivered twin one, who was Derek, at 6:25. So within an hour, it was 10 centimeters, a couple of pushes. And then 8 minutes later, twin two was born, who was Patrick. And literally, you couldn't have written it compared to, like, literally, I even looked back on my notes from I journaled throughout my pregnancy. I should have said that as well. Not on voice, but literally not every week. You know yourself, you're busy with kids and stuff and with all that we're doing. But I looked back on birth preferences and I was like, I would prefer not to have one too. So I would prefer not to have episiotomy. You know, everything I had between a first and second degree tear, like the difference, even the physicality of the recovery, like it was just night and day. And like that, I had kept a very open mind about feeding them, certainly with twins, you know, but I said, sure, I'll go for the breastfeeding. Why not? I had the pillow as well. My sister-in-law bought me a gorgeous pillow. So they both latched. You know, I was 3 months waiting for Evelyn to latch. You know, they both latched. So that was great. But I'm combination feeding them. I was actually combination feeding them in the hospital as well. Insatiable appetite, two boys, like, compared to poor little Evelyn. But it was just night and day, honestly. And the, like, I was up walking around. So the, like, within an hour or so, we were back in the ward, and this was about 10 o'clock at night now. So they had left us a good while, and then sure, I had to go home. And I was on such a high, I was like, head off, don't be worrying. Like, you know, like I probably would have asked for him to stay longer. But I sent him off with the bags. Like, I thought I would be there. I thought I'd be in labor for days, you know, the usual, like, or be sent down for cesarean. So you would have had a smaller bag. So, like, you know, like, gorgeous shower. I ended up having a shower with his Nivea for Men rotten stuff that I could find. Like, I didn't even have a nappy. I literally sent him home. I was like, this is brilliant. I was like, don't worry, I'll see you in the morning. I had sent him. The only thing I had was the reduced pack that you had in case you had to go down for a C-section. So I think I had two nappies for the entire night. You know, the way, like, not that you'd have to change them so much, but didn't even have my lovely shower stuff. Oh, it was just so funny. But that's literally there was no comparison, you know, because everything was pretty much textbook on what I had written in my birth preferences. So, like, it was brilliant. And they were both, so Patrick was 22 and he was heavier, but Derek was 100 grams off needing to go to the NICU. So neither of them had to go. Like, I was so, so grateful. Even the midwives, like, one of them did basically a matrix jump over me to keep twin two in position and held my stomach to ensure, you know, like,
because that's even it's so fascinating. Yeah,
don't know how they do it, because I had said, again, there wasn't much, it's ironic, but there wasn't much intelligible conversation when I got to meet the two midwives, who were angels, obviously. But when I got down there, they had said, like, don't worry, like, there'll be lots of doctors, probably more, and a breech specialist in case we have to rush to theater. The chances that twin two turns is quite high, no problem. But I still remember when Derek was born, one of the midwives ran out and was like, quick, there's a vaginal twin delivery, come on. And a couple of students came in. I was thrilled. I was like, come in. I have one of my friends is a midwife, she's now a practice nurse, but I had called her endlessly throughout the pregnancy, and I was like, what will I do, what's going to happen? And she was like, just let it happen. And in fairness, I was like, is it likely that if I go down this road of asking for a vaginal delivery, I'll end up? And she was like, you just don't know until the day. It was brilliant advice, again, brilliant advice, but like, you couldn't have written it compared to what I had felt after Evelyn's. Even the fact that, it sounds ridiculous, but the fact that I'd slept the night before, I was able to eat, you know, energy levels, like, stuff. I even remember when we had gone in for the induction with the twins, there were a couple of girls on the ward who were upset, like I was. Not that I would have ever had a look in, but I remember thinking, God, if I could tell them that it's not going to be like that, and that they were going to have their baby. Like, if somebody had told me when I was laboring with Evelyn, like, don't worry, it's not that, it's just hard now, but it'll be better. But I remember thinking, those poor girls are in exactly facing the exact same position as I was. But then on my second and third, it was like night and day. It was brilliant. No, I was absolutely delighted.
It's amazing to hear that you were so focused and just in that zone, and it's such a, like, if you could apply yourself to something else the way you do it's just a place that you probably can't ever return to until you're in that, if you were to ever give birth again, I don't think you could find yourself there otherwise.
No, everything aligned. But in fairness, it's the preparation and the understanding. Like your first, the focus is on antenatal classes and stuff, but it's the first 1,000 days, you know, like it's the birthday is one day and then every other day you're still working, you know, like you're still doing the best and everybody around you is your massive support system. I'm very lucky and was supported in every decision I made, even like when I told my sisters that I was combination feeding them, you know, there was a bottle machine at the door, there was extra bottles, sterilizers, you know what I mean? Like we're just, you know, we're blessed, like, but it really depends on circumstances whether or not your birth is one way or the other. But in fairness, I had felt that the hypnobirthing had kind of been a turning point, because even if I'd had to be rushed for a cesarean, I was totally prepared for that, because I understood that, you know, that there are medical interventions, because there has to be, rather than it was my own failure.
Yeah. And you still had the hypnobirthing tools, even if you did have a cesarean birth, you still had the hypnobirthing birthing tools. And also I found them really beneficial after baby was here. Just, you know, to help me keep my cool during feeding. I'm sure you needed to tap into some of those tools when you had twins and a toddler.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like even the upbreathing, like the pain. So I still had oversupply, even though I was feeding twins. Now I was combination feeding, which actually worked out so well, because eventually my supply has reduced because I'm combination feeding.
Okay.
But like the pain of the letdown, it was like, it feels like a contraction within your boobs, like the pain. It's such a surge. Even one of the midwives, when I was going in for the regular weigh-ins for Evelyn, she described oversupply as pouring a drink down the back of your neck. So those, even when I was feeding twins, they were also experiencing, so they were also refluxy, colicky, vomiting, lots of spit up. But like that would kind of be the only thing I'd say is, like I said, I love breastfeeding Evelyn. I have no regrets, every feed, but for me, informed feeding would be the best way to go, because I even found challenges bottle feeding. Like there's no straightforward way to feed a baby. Any way that you do it is amazing. All of the bottle feeds are just as important as breast. Like it's just, now that I've gone whole circle of exclusive breastfeeding to combination feeding and experienced challenges in both ways, it's just incredible the work that we have to do. And with a toddler at home, a toddler in tow, do you know what I mean? Like even one of the ladies who had recorded the triplet birth on your podcast, who had said that the odd time her man takes one, so they only have twins. I was like, how did they do it? Oh. How do they do it with triplets? Like, how do they feed? Yeah. How do they keep them alive? Amazing. Like, how? Like,
I know, Jennifer. No, twins. Like, I struggle with two, and they're not even, like, they're 3.5 and 2. I couldn't. Yeah.
Oh no, in fairness, it's tough going, but like it's two for the price of one, like with the birth, if there's no complications.
Yeah, yeah.
No, 8 minutes apart, but yeah. I only labored once for two babies.
Your body's like, amazing. Incredible. Yeah, the way it just that hypnobirthing, it's just key. I really think it's key.
Oh, it's huge, but like again, one of the positives, and I know a lot of women suffered hugely through pregnancy and birth during COVID, but the only positive of COVID that I found was that piece of the accessibility to educate yourself about birth and about pregnancy. So the online courses, podcasts, time to listen to it, you know, freedom to listen to it, even like amazing. So that would be one of the main things going forward, is like that kind of, I'd love to see a multidisciplinary, interdisciplinary birth education suite is available. That would be kind of, in other countries, it would just be expected. You know what I mean? Rather than kind of, nothing wrong with going in with an open mind, but there I went in on my first birth, not knowing I could refuse a vaginal exam. Like, do you Sean, like, I'm an educated woman. I should have known. Not that I had any negative experiences, but I found them painful. And why didn't I say that?
Know, you know, like the majority of us bonkers. Can totally relate to going in first time round thinking that we're just going to give birth. That's just what's going to happen. Yeah.
I bring the car seat in and head home, not realizing, you know, I remember looking out the window of the chapel when I was weeping, like seeing people drive by and be like, how dare they? Their life is continuing and they don't know that I'm in this pain. Like, how is life continuing when I'm under this extreme, excruciating pain, which it is, you know, the fear. Fear takes over.
Thank you so much. That was so lovely. And I'm so glad we have met and I've had the opportunity to hear your two birth stories. And I think so many of us can relate to this episode. First time round, so full of fear. Second time round, we were full of knowledge and power. So thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. I certainly enjoyed speaking to Jennifer. And I have shared some really beautiful images over on the Instagram page, which I will pop in the show notes, of Jennifer feeding her boys, and yeah, just really gorgeous photos that will get the oxytocin flowing, no doubt, if you are expecting. And I will also, of course, tag Finding Charlie's Voice in the show notes. So if you're looking for a communication board or to speak to other parents who are going through the same experience as you are, discovering that your child has a speech disorder, pop over there. Evelyn is a great support. We're all in this together. So have a good week, and I will chat to you on Monday with another episode.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.